there.
Adam Eaton, welcome to the RMNB podcast. I'm calling this the RMNB interview series. Since we're all quarantined, I figured we'd reach out to athletes around the area, see how they're doing, and maybe go into some storytelling, going into some things that I think a lot of people might be interested in. A, we won the World Series with Nats, which is amazing. Two, you're a huge hockey fan. Three, that Nats at the Caps game was probably one of my most favorite Capitals games of all time. So those are all things I really want to get into. But first of all, how are you doing? How are you doing with your family? And how are you kind of handling quarantine life right now?
No, I appreciate that. Quarantine life's a little different, you know, just for the mere fact that we're pretty busy right about now. So my body's having a little trouble with, you know, not being, you know, as active, you know, being around guys, flying, traveling. You know, we're making the most of it. The interesting thing is all athletes go through is you're not home very often. So to kind of be home, I'm going to get some coffee one second. Sorry.
Yeah, sure. No, go
ahead. Thank you. Thank you. To be home is kind of nice. You know, we're only home about 2 months out of the year. So to be home and, you know, get stuff done around the house, you know, I mean, I moved in this house probably 5 years ago, and we literally were cleaning boxes out from the move this morning. So if it gives you an indication that, you know, like I said, you don't get much done around the house, and to be able to come home and you know, have some downtime with the family and be able to do stuff around the house, I put a shed up. I did, you know, different things that you don't usually get to do because when I get home, it's November, December usually, and it's cold and snowy up here in Michigan. So I'm not being able to get outside very often. So like I said, being able to catch up on that's been nice. Family as well, you know. My son is now 4 and my other Maverick's ready to turn 2. And this is going to be kind of the tougher years I've heard for kids, especially with me being on the road all the time. So to be able to really spend some quality time with them, you know, Braden's starting to get that when dad goes on the road, he's not coming home for 10, you know, 14 days at a time. So it's been very, very nice to be able to be home and enjoy them.
So one of the things too that, so I have a 3-year-old and his name is Ethan. And one of the things that I've kind of noticed is that I watch hockey. I do hockey. I play hockey all the time. And do your kids like love baseball as much as you? Like how have they picked that up or haven't they at all? Cause my son loves trucks, which he calls truckins and fire trucks. And he'll hold a hockey stick sometimes, but that's about it.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Braden was at game 6 and 7 in Houston last year. And I think kids are kids at that age. And I mean, we went on the field afterwards, you know, my mom, dad, my wife, and just Braden. Maverick wasn't there just with travel. It's, you know, as you probably will all aware, it's pretty hectic with, you know, traveling during the playoffs. But, you know, dad get to stay in the same toe hole as I did. You know, mom was in the batter's box as we're, you know, walking off the field. And Braden was literally just run the bases like he was in the backyard. Like not, but it was cool for us. But for him, he's just, you know, just being a kid. So I think with that, he hasn't quite got the grip on like baseball and, you know, dad plays in the big leagues, but he just sees, you know, dad's on TV and kind of a normal thing with it. But, he loves baseball, loves to hit. Maverick, my 2-year-old, like I said, almost 2-year-old, loves to hit and throw. But like you said, I mean, they're more into cars and Looney Tunes and all kinds of, you know, Paw Patrol and all that stuff. But, like I said, you know, I'm not going to push them towards any sport. They love hockey as well. You know, my brother-in-law played at Michigan State. Now he's, I think he's owned by Calgary now. He was in the AHL, ECHL this year, kind of bouncing back and forth. And then my wife's dad played some professional hockey. So you have that side of the family as well, too. So like I said, they get a mixture of both. And like I said, they just love to be active. It doesn't matter if it's cars, trucks, playing in sand or, you know, playing hockey or baseball.
That's amazing. Now, we were going to do this interview yesterday. I want you to tell people what you ended up doing instead.
I hope I don't get in trouble for this. I know being in Northern Virginia, D.C., Maryland area, it might not be frowned upon, but I'm a big hunter. You know, I love to, you know, deer hunt, duck hunt, goose hunt, you know, squirrel hunt, whatever it may be. Just being outdoors, I absolutely love it. So something I've never been able to participate in is a turkey hunt. It's always usually April, middle April into May. And of course we're pretty busy right about this time. It's kind of basically the same thing for hockey guys with deer hunting. You know, they're quite busy at that time. So not unable to do that. So, you know, I took full advantage of it, was able to I don't want to say kill, but able to harvest a turkey yesterday. We were supposed to have it. Ended up, you know, breaking the turkey down and smoking the turkey and then having it for dinner. So it kind of, I don't want to say it trumped, you know, RMNB, but it kind of did for a split second.
It definitely does. It's going to sound like a humble brag, but it's not. So when I wrote a Washington Post story on Dylan Bundy, so he grew up in Oklahoma. And sure. When I was talking to him when he was with the Frederick Keys, I live in Frederick, Maryland, which is about 40 miles north sure. of D.C. He had actually brought a crossbow that day to hunt mice and rats in the outfield. And so
you gotta be pretty good to be able to hit him with that. But yeah, I've heard I think he has his own brand of duck hunting equipment, goose hunting equipment, blind and stuff. So, you know, I think with all athletes, you know, hockey players, like I said, try to keep the parallels with hockey and then baseball. You got to keep yourself occupied off the field. And for us, again, when we finish baseball season, usually it's goose season, duck season, and really deer season. I'm sure with, like I said, hockey players, they're the big lake guys. I'm sure they keep their lake life full bloom. Like I said, that's, you know, midsummer when they, you know, start up right after season. But for us, it's always been getting outside, getting in the outdoors, kind of getting away from civilization and kind of relaxing a little bit. So that's what, you know, we try to gravitate toward. But like I said, I know Bundy's a big hunter and a pretty avid duck guy.
I mean, that was pretty badass just to see a guy walking out to his gigantic pickup truck with, like, I don't know anything about cars. Like, I know a lot about NASCAR, but I don't know a lot about cars in general like you. But his wheels were like 40 inches tall, and it had like lights that lit up the entire thing. And it had a crossbow. I was just like, this guy is so badass.
The same thing with Davey Martinez, the same thing. Big hunter. He's got some land in Nashville, Tennessee. Right outside Nashville. You know, Jan Gomes, our catcher, owns, you know, outside Knoxville. So a lot of guys, like I said, love to get outdoors. You know, we're constantly with media. We're constantly kind of in the spotlight, so to speak. So to, again, kind of go back to your childhood memories, get outside and, you know, try to be manly, I guess, you know, bow hunting, you know, using guns. And like I said, try to enjoy nature as much as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's awesome. Now, one of the things that happened with the coronavirus pandemic is it kind of happened right when you guys ended towards the end of spring training, which I can't even imagine how much of a bummer that is that you ramp yourself up for spring training and then there's nothing. And then on top of that, you guys won the championship. And then, you know, I know the banner raising was supposed to happen. You guys were supposed to get rings. There was so much to look forward to. How have you kind of handled that? And I know Mike Rizzo talked, I don't know if you heard this, but a few days ago he went on MLB Sirius Radio and said that they are not going to raise the banner or give out rings until fans can be back in the stadium because they want to celebrate with fans.
Well, I hope I'm around for that. I still have a team option next year, so I do everything how the contracts work. Oh, God. I might stink.
Well, hopefully they fly you and Parra out there if that doesn't happen.
That's true. But, no, I completely agree. You know, we're nothing without our fans. You know, it's tough to think about baseball without any energy in the park, any buzz, anybody, you know, yelling at you that you hate you from opposing team, you know, or opposing fan, or, you know, the roar of the crowd when people are rooting for you. It's hard to fathom that. And like I said, I completely back him 110%. You know, that banner's for our fans, that banner's for, you know, the DMV. That's that area is so, you know, enriched, of course, with the Nationals and the Caps. I think both teams have done an unbelievable job trying to, you know, rival each other and try to push one another to be better. And those fans have, you know, come along with it. So they deserve it, and they deserve to see it in person and have a chance to buy a ticket in order to see it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that. But look back to your original question. Yeah, it's difficult. You know, we ended the season November 1. I got home by November 7th, and then I was back working out November 14th.
Wow.
So I got about a week to 10 days off, basically, about a week at home with not doing anything, which usually get about a month, 5 weeks, 4 weeks to 5 weeks to get off. And when you only had about a week to 10 days off, you know, our trainers were like, you're going to hate us, but this is what we need to do. So to not take any time off at all and ramp right back up, and then to, you know, put in that extra work, you know, in the off season in order to be prepared. And then with, you know, 2 weeks left when really you're you're starting to peak at this point, to be shut down. Kind of sucks, to be honest with you. You know, I'm sure the guys that, you know, didn't go to the World Series, they ramp up just like us, but I feel like with going that long, it is even more stress on our bodies. So with that being said, it's kind of a positive. Now we can kind of draw back. We can get Max and those guys and Strauss that had so many innings, and Corbin and Sanchi, you know, get those guys that had so many innings to kind of take a step back and relax a little bit. And I think it's benefiting us in some way, shape, or form to allow those guys to kind of have some extra time off. But of course, we want to be playing. But like I said, it's kind of tough. Like I said, same thing with hockey. I mean, yeah. Heck, you guys play an entire season, and you know, you're getting to the nitty gritty when this is about time the Caps really just go whoomp straight up. Every year, there's always that. You know, we start off blazing hot, then we have the lulls in between, and then you know, gets everybody in line, Backstrom gets everyone in line, and we move and make a push to the playoffs. But it was just about time the boys were going to start playing. So that's got to be tough.
When the Caps tried to defend their Stanley Cup in 2019, they also ran out of gas. So you're right. It could actually end up being a benefit, especially to the pitchers. Like, what is one of the things that maybe, so for instance, for me is that I play hockey every Sunday, and you know, I'm not an athlete at all. I played in high school, but I'm not an athlete. And
if you can skate, you're an athlete. Trust me. If you can skate.
What happens, you know, so like I'm getting 5 pounds. My muscle is kind of turning to fat a little bit because I'm not playing as much. Like, what happens to a baseball player? Like, how are you kind of staying in shape? And like, do you have a batting cage at home? Like, how do you kind of keep your timing?
Yeah, that's you don't. I've always been a firm believer to separate family and what I do. It's just, you know, kind of ingrained with me. I mean, it's always been being from my father. You know, my father never brought, you know, he's a firefighter. You know, my mom was actually a waitress when we were younger, but it was always taught to me that you never bring work home and you never basically do work at home when you're around your children. So for me, I don't have a cage. I don't know what you want to call them, but they're like interlocking. They're only go to 45 pounds downstairs, and that's literally all I have. So for me, I love outside. Again, I love outside. I have a little bit of land, just not too far from us in Michigan. And my workouts are cutting down trees, moving trees, working the land, basically. Just trying to do any type of athletic movements when I can. You know, I can't hit. Nothing's open right now. Can't get in the cage. Geez. There's no flips. No one can throw it to you. So it's like I said, Michigan, we're really on lockdown. You know, technically, if I would even go to that, I could be fined. Even my other property, they say it's illegal to go to as well. So, wow. You know, it's kind of hang out at home and, like I said, pick up the kids and do some squats with them when you wake up in the morning, do some lunges with them, you know.
Use I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, exactly. And they're wiggling, so it's a good core exercise. But like I said, just like the more talks I've done about this is that people are getting super creative at this point. On social media, which is really cool, but as well for us, you know, like I said, getting outside, doing different things, making things harder than what they need to be. You pick up a log, usually just carry it over your shoulder, but you know, hold it out here, do some shoulder stability. I mean, serious,
that makes sense.
And then go and do like a hit, you know, like I'm hitting, you know, good thrust. So like I said, just trying to make things more difficult than it is. And like I said, I think I'm working and I'm more active now than I would be during the season, which is pretty crazy.
Wow, that's cool. I did see that one of the Orioles prospects threw a baseball across like an entire lake. I don't know. That's all I've seen.
Get creative. Like, get creative. You have to. For me, throwing is a different progression, so I'm not throwing right now. But like I said, pitchers especially, you got to keep your arm up, up in that, where you could really just go again. As a position player, it's a little bit different. But – yeah, you got to get creative. You got to figure out ways to, kind of stay in that. I'm not hurting myself and not beating myself up, but I can ramp up relatively easily. So it's kind of feeling that out. Like I said, older guys are probably a little easier to do that. Young guys are kind of figuring it out at this point. So
yeah, I can imagine. Well, I hope. Obviously, I hope for everybody's safety, and I hope that the season start again safely. I know the NHL is thinking about like having 4 different cities where people play and they do like triple headers a day, and I'm not as optimistic as maybe some that things will pick up, especially having friends in the medical industry, and I think, you know, so but I hope whenever you guys get to celebrate your championship year, it's just going to be such a magical moment. And I think on top of that, because of the pandemic, people are going to be so excited to see you guys that it's going to be one of those emotional things. I remember when 9/11 happened and like the first hockey game, I mean, I was crying during the national anthem. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a very powerful moment. So, so obviously we'll be thinking about that. I want to go into last season a little bit, but I also want to ask you, so one of the ways that you got on my radar, and actually one of the ways that we started covering Nationals baseball and saw that we had a huge audience was when we covered you wearing a Capitals hat during your injury rehab, and people really, really got excited about that. There's like a synergy between the two teams, but like, how did you first get into the Capitals, and how did you maybe, you know, you kind of talked a little bit about how you first got into hockey, but can you expand upon that?
Yeah. So, you know, how I came in love with the Capitals, I met Blaine Forsyth, actually, which is the power play and face-offs coach. His wife and my wife met at a park with the kids. Oh, and, wow. that was kind of a, you know, a parallel. You know, I was already a Capitals fan at that point, but, you know, I played in some interesting cities with hockey. You know, I played in Phoenix, the Coyotes loved them. You know, they were a very grindy team, but wasn't of course very good, but easily likable players like Doan, Mike Smith, you know, some guys that are pretty good. And, you know, then I went to Chicago, you know, when I was in Chicago, they won a cup in Chicago. So it was like, I kind of just continued to build on my knowledge of hockey. Went to Miami of Ohio. We went to national championship in 2009. It's a very sour. I don't even want to talk about it because it makes me sick to my stomach. Versus Boston U, up 3-1 with 3 minutes and 23 seconds to go. And we end up losing in overtime.
Oh, no.
Unfortunate. So that's, like I said, a whole different story. But that's where the first love came.
Some of the famous alumni there, John Walton, Mitch Korn.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, we have quite a few. Ben Roethlisberger. We have Wally Zerbiak.
We have
quite a few hockey players. You know, Wingles was with San Jose when they were making some good pushes. We got like Carter Campers in the minor leagues, AHL. Andy Mealy's in the AHL. Quite a few guys. It's a good program. You know, it was in the CCHA until I think a year or two after when the Big Ten actually expanded. But like I said, that's when the love really started. You know, I grew up in Ohio, no money to be able to play hockey. I would have loved to have played hockey. I think, you know, my build, you know, I just love the tenacity, the intensity, the speed is just great. But my mom and dad, the nearest sheet of ice was like an hour and a half away in Columbus. And, my mom and dad saw what the bill would have been for the first time. And there was just like, and like, it was one of those things where it's like, no, it's too far away. No, it's too expensive. Like, mom and dad basically were just trying to shield me from staying where we couldn't afford it. But like I said, I didn't know what hockey really was. You know, I saw hockey highlights on SportsCenter. But then, like I said, went to Miami, Ohio. They were, you know, top 25 in the country seemingly every year. Met my wife there, which again, had the parallels with her brother and her dad. And then, like I said, being in some cool cities with some, you know, decent hockey, you know, kind of fall in love with it. And then, like I said, coming to the Capitals is so easy to be able to fall in love with a team like that. Blue collared, but absolute superstars all over the place. And like I said, then you meet Blaine and, you know, meet some of the boys that way. And then, you know, when they won the cup, brought it to us. That was probably one of the cooler things. You know, of course, Chicago, they brought the cup in. But you have a genuine friendship with the team. When they brought that, they really wanted us. You could feel that they really wanted us. Like, we didn't win this for you guys, but you know, enjoy this. Like, take a look at what we've won and what we have accomplished. We want you guys to do this, and I think that friendship affair was very bonding. And I think for us, helped us. You know, seeing another team in the same area do that didn't make it any easier. Of course, you know, still playing the games, but you see that you could accomplish something.
When they brought the cup to Nats Park, that was one of the games I went to. I was credentialed on the field. I was standing right by the dugout. Now, obviously, someone who runs a blog is a fan of the team, and it's a little bit more emotional. And I mean, I've been rooting for the team since I was like 12. It's like 1992, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember the roar of the crowd when they started announcing Ovi. And he brought it out. I mean, I think the excitement was, you know, one, the Capitals won, and I think there's a lot of overlap of fans between you guys. But two, it's just, I think everybody felt like DC was cursed, you know? And sure. And when that when that monkey got off the back, it was such a jubilant feeling that I will never be able to replicate. Just running around with my camera taking photos of Ovi holding up the cup, kind of drunk. But what do you, so inside the dugout, like I know you took a photo with the Stanley Cup and I remember seeing that. What what was kind of that experience like for you? Just like, do you remember any funny stories from being there?
No, this is my second time again seeing it in person. Of course, never touching it. I don't know. I want to tell everyone, don't touch the cup.
Did
don't
you
raise
lift
the
it?
Cup.
Hey, wait. Did you lift it?
No, heck no. I don't. Yeah. Again, I'm not saying nobody else respects the people that have won it in their future winners, but I don't know. I just, like I said, I've kind of grew up in the hockey world at this point, and I know that I don't touch that thing. I definitely don't lift it up above my head. I stay, you know, 2 to 4 inches away, you know, with my hand behind it and act like it's my friend. But besides that, you do not do that.
Okay. First of all, if you should have, because I didn't take a picture with a cup when it was in the area until the Caps won it. But when the Caps won it, it is ours. And see, you have special, you have special rules because you're an athlete. Me, I was like, can I hold it to the keeper of the cup, to Phil Pritchard? He was like, absolutely not. You are mingling, but exactly. I bet you could have gotten away with it. They would have been like, sure, whatever.
So what's funny, Zim picked it up and the got on him. Yeah. What's his name again?
It should have been Philip Pritchard. I saw him there.
Yeah.
That day.
He's white gloves. He's got kind of like what lighter hair. But yeah, he was all over Zim to put it down. It's like, you realize this guy is like dang near the mayor of the city here. I mean, he does whatever he wants.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it was cool. Like I said, they came in, put it in Skip's office and everyone kind of made the rounds. But like I said, what I enjoyed was you see all the guys from afar, like Oshie and Holby and Ovi. And I mean, you list goes on, all of them. And they come up to you. And for me, just like, I know them, like, just like another fan does, you think you're personable, like, you know them as real people. But they came up to me and was like, hey, what's up, Adam? Like, how we doing? And I'm like, you know my name? Like, what come in here for the real thing. And it's like, it's hard for me to fathom that I'm even on the radar.
Similar like feeling said, when you followed us on Instagram for me, all right?
No, so. Come on. But like I said, very, very unique feeling. Like I said, Holby comes up, hey, how's your family doing? Everybody's good. And I'm like, why do you even know my name? Like, and you are asking me how my family's doing. Like, this is pretty. And maybe they're just hammer drunk and they looked at my name tag and was like, yeah, come on in here. Like,
it's possible. I can't say no.
Exactly. But like I said, it was pretty cool to, like I said, for them to think of us, you know, bring it and then really enjoy it. Sometimes you have guys that you come in and they're like, not they don't want to be there, but they're just like, you know, we have to be here type deal. And like I said, you could tell those boys were really enjoying it. And then I don't even remember who we were playing that day because. Like I said, they smelled like a brewery the whole way out. We went out and took a picture. And then the whole game, it was just Ovi just raising the cup every single time. There was cheering going on. And I'm like, what's going on? I thought they were streaking. Somebody was streaking on the field because you're all of a sudden you hear this. No, Ovi's raising the cup again. So what a day for them.
Like, were you hearing it on the field, like those loud cheers?
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. And like I said, it was distracting. I don't even remember who we were playing because every time – it might have been every half inning they were raising it up and having a good old time. Like I said, as they should enjoy it.
I remember Dan Coco interviewed Ovi. I think it was Tom. Well, he was interviewing Ovi up in the suite level, and then Tom Wilson beside him just started randomly singing "We Are the Champions," and then like the whole suite started singing. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Awesome. No, I was at the game. I didn't see that until afterwards. And it was just, I don't know. I didn't even mention that they know how to party. And I'm still speechless about that day too. It was.
Well, like you said, it's a long time coming. You know, the city doesn't think it's possible. Then all of a sudden you're like, you're almost watching a miracle happen. It's like, this is it. Like, this is what it feels like to have waited and have earned a championship and to be able to enjoy it and basically be able to do whatever you want. And hey, buddy, do whatever you want for say hi, Matt. Say hi.
Any cameos by your family is okay, by the way. My son might run down naked. I have no idea. It's always something that I'm ready for emotionally.
So. But like I said, to be able to see that emotion and be able to basically, they could do whatever they wanted for about 2 weeks. like I said, took full advantage of it and was awesome to watch. And like I said, it made us, you know, want to do it too. One second. Hey, Katie, can you kid him, please? Hey, bud, can you go see mom? Sorry about this.
No, that's great. No, this is the life of dads that no one knows. Is that
exactly?
No matter what you're doing, they'll show up. I was watching like I don't want to admit this, but like I watch the like Chicago Fire, Chicago PD shows on DVR like 1 or 2 a.m. and my son will sometimes just walk downstairs when he should be sleeping and like scare the S out of me on the couch. And I'll be like, where did you come from? And sometimes he's wearing pants. Sometimes he's not. Like, you have no idea what's going to happen as a dad.
No boundaries.
No boundaries.
But anyways, back to it. Like I said, it was cool to be able to enjoy it with him. And then like vice versa, we were able to, return the favor. And that was a night for the books. I don't want to get too far ahead in your podcast, that was one for the books.
So like last year, the World Series run, when did, you know, I remember reading, because I consume a lot of your guys' content, like I remember Dan Steinberg was writing a lot about the team, and it just, there was this really negative feeling the first month or two. You guys were under 500. When did things change for you? Like, when did this belief happen, or when did things change or that light go on? Because I'm going to use, again, the Capitals as an example. Is the Capitals in 2018 during the regular season were not very good. Like, if you look at advanced analytics, they struggled. Braden Holtby was benched the last 2 months. Philip Grubauer started the beginning of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. This team was a little bit of a shambles, but then it just seems like a lot of times everything comes together, and a lot of times, you know, even when you guys did that Zoom call, there's just this chemistry between all of you guys that is just unbelievable.
Yeah, no, and I think that is the key. Something that you say analytics, you say the stat sheet, there's part of the stat sheet that no one, unless you're in the room, could feel. For us, when we started out, it was just, it's a long season, you know, it's 162 games. And when we started out, what was it, 19 and 31, I feel like everyone should, you know, get that printed on their forehead because of how much it's been thrown in our face, 19 and 31. But you look at the guys in the room, it's the same thing with, you know, with the Caps. You got Max Scherzer, you got Kurt Suzuki, you got Ryan Zimmerman, you got Strasburg, you got Howie Kendrick, you know, those five guys. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. It doesn't matter what, you know, the noise out in the room. It doesn't matter. It's what those guys say and goes. You know, you have a good vocal leadership group that leads by example. It keeps everybody up. You know what I mean? No one can falter. No one could, you could go a different direction. Everyone's on the same plane, and no one's above the game. No one's below the game. You know, rookie, whatever, superstar, everyone's even. And when everyone treats it as such, that's why you have that, like I said, the long season. That's why you have the bounce back, in my opinion. So we're 19-31. You know, there's no speeches being made. It's just basically everyone knows what to do. You follow the leader. You follow the veterans in the clubhouse. And like I said, you can't put your finger on it. But all of a sudden, you start winning some games and you start pushing. You keep the grindstone. It's hard to put a date on when we made the turnaround. Because I think everyone was focused. Everyone's just focused on going 1-0 the next day, making a good pitch, you know, playing defense. And if you struggle or you don't do something correctly, you bounce back, because again, that's what the veterans are going to do. So, like I said, what a special season. It's so cool in the way we did it. Even, you know, coming back and all the elimination games and whatnot, but, one for the books for sure. But again, the guys in the room are who make it. And, you know, Davey could come in and say something, and Davey is an unbelievable manager. I've really enjoyed him, but the voices in the room were really the older guys, and like these guys are going to really point us in the right direction. Mm-hmm.
Two of the guys that on your team that are just extreme characters, I would say, is Gerard Parra, Brian Dozier, who I think one thing is that, like, you know, the Nationals are still, you know, you guys only been around about a decade or so. You guys are still kind of a new team, and part of the championship run, which was amazing, was that a lot of the personality of the team came out more and more kind of because of those two guys and a few others.
Absolutely.
Can you kind of speak to maybe at first Parra and the whole baby shark phenomenon that happened? I could tell you at the watch party. So I was on the field covering the watch party on Game 7 of the World Series. And again, it's just like seeing 30,000, 20,000 people doing the baby shark chomp. So excited. It gives you tingles. You know what I mean? It's just
Definitely different. Yeah, no, for sure. And I think you need those personalities in the clubhouse, you know, going from, you know, first kind of couple questions, but like you need guys that are different, guys that just kind of bring that relaxing, makes everybody else feel a little bit uncomfortable to begin, bring that line, that even line, you know. Steven Strasburg, quietest guy in the world, goes about his business and most professional as possible, doesn't say boo to anybody. And you have Gerardo Parra and Anibal Sanchez dancing with him and like hugging him, making him feel so uncomfortable. But you see that man that's uncomfortable, he's touchable, you know, he's human. He becomes, like I said, he has a personality all of a sudden. He's
really funny. Like said, you, he's he really is, he, funny.
He is. And like I said, but you gotta take the layers of the onion off in order to get to that, Steven Strasburg. But like I said, you have those guys, Dozier, same thing. Can't keep a shirt on.
Yeah. Is what's a up joke, with that? Sir.
I can't go into it. There's a lot of things I'd get in a lot of trouble for with a lot of the guys, but, we have a lot of things in which he, enjoys himself in the clubhouse in front of a lot of the guys and enjoys, you know, the camaraderie of that. And like I said, really brought, again, giving him vulnerability, to allow everyone else to just, like I said, just making everyone human, you know, in big league clubhouses and probably hockey, there's a lot of egos. And when you can make everyone have a little more humility and just kind of loosen up and enjoy one another, you know, the losses don't extend too far and the wins keep going. So, like I said, those characters, I think without them, we don't do what we need to do. And I give credit to Rizzo, you know, I think we made our, I don't remember, it was April, May, you know, beginning of May, early June, or excuse me, late May, early June is when we started playing well and getting going. And then, you know, the trade deadline, he could have blown up, but then he adds pieces, you know, he's bringing guys in, you know, he helped with the bullpen. He brings in Gerardo Parra in like late May, early June there too. So like I said, you have those additions that Rizzo, again, didn't win GM of the Year is beyond me. But like I said, just not blowing up the team at that point and holding true to what he believes is huge.
He took a lot of gruff in the seasons before, you know, shutting Strasburg down early that one season. Yeah. And I think the funny thing is that after he won the World Series, you look back at everything he's done and you're like, wow, he is a top tier.
He knows what he's doing.
He is why did we ever criticize him? And I think that's what, you know, Brian McClellan too. Look at him and you're like, it's hard to imagine a better general manager of a hockey team. Really. Like he might have a mistake, but it's not his fault. On paper, it was perfect. You know, so you guys make the playoffs, you get in, you start making some noise. I don't even know where to start with the playoffs, but
I can help you out.
But, yeah, go ahead.
The play-in game was unbelievable. You know, down 3-1. 3-1 there in the ninth inning. The pinch hit for me was Zim, which is unbelievable. Zim, you know, gets a single there. You know, get a couple more guys on, and then you know, Soto getting that big hit was unbelievable. Gets in a rundown. No one. It's one of the weirdest plays I've ever been to. If somebody gets in a rundown, and does like I'm invisible mode, which is what we always say is you run around the bases and you get caught up. It's like you're not invisible. Like there's a big league ball club, but everybody, whatever 40-some thousand people in the stadium, they could not give a that he just got thrown out at second. Everyone's going nuts. And actually, I think it was more beneficial for us because Huddy was up now. Like he was already ready to go. The momentum was already going down. Like if all of a sudden we have another batter and he strikes out, then it's kind of like, oh, okay, but we're here we go. It was like he was out, the crowd was going nuts, and you know, 2.5 minutes later we were basically getting out number one. What an absolute game. And then you know, going to LA.
Wait, now I want to tell you, that game, I started believing. Now, do you know why I started believing?
You were believing that?
I was believing that game, just the play-in game. Because if Evgeny Kuznetsov was there, okay, now he's the guy who scored against Pittsburgh in game six to finally get the Capitals past Pittsburgh, and then they won the Stanley Cup after that. He was at your guys' game, and he started doing the bird celly in the crowd.
I saw that.
And so I was like, this feels weird. This feels right. I don't know. Kuzi was suspended. That's the only reason why he was there. Cause I think they're on a West Coast string and I don't know. That felt night perfect. Felt weird. Yeah. And then I'll let you keep going.
But no, I'm with you. I think honestly, the whole way through, I felt like there were every second or third game, there was a game where it just felt like we're kind of bound to do this. Like, yeah, it's weird that we feel that way. LA is the same way. That was the best team we faced by far. Honestly, in my opinion, by far was the Dodgers. Not slighting anybody else, but, and I think everyone would agree with me, they had 100 and however many wins. They were an unbelievable team. The pitching was stupid good. Buehler is, in my opinion, top three at bats, toughest at bats I have had in my career. Wow. Period. He was unbelievable. All those guys, their whole staff was unbelievable. And then just their lineup, just thump all the way around, all, one through eight. Even off the bench, they had guys that could play, starting in, 25 of the major league teams is unbelievable. And then their bullpen was one of the best in the big leagues as well. So it was just like, to win that series with Howie in the 10th was, when we did that, honest to God, I'm not thinking this because I don't want to jinx anything. I'm very superstitious. I want to focus on today, focus on now. But now looking back, when Howie hit that grand slam and we won, I'm like, we are going to win everything. Wow. Again, now looking back. At the time, I did not think that. I'm like, okay, now on to St. Louis. Thank goodness St. Louis beat the Braves because I felt like the Braves had our number for the majority of the year. I don't know what the statistics were, but it just felt that way. But that beating the Dodgers was – man, not a sigh of relief, but it was one of those things where now I think that we are going on to the next, I think we're going to be able to get to the World Series and have a good shot at this, to be honest with you.
I believe in those moments. I think there are these moments that just you carry on with you. Again, like that Kuzi goal when the Caps beat Pittsburgh, he's like, well, the next two teams are going to be easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm
glad you think it that way, but still don't think that. But
I really do believe in momentum sometimes with sports because, analytics, you can kind of predict the regular season, but in short series, I really believe momentum is a big part of it.
I think both games, hockey, you might, of course, way more about hockey than I do with baseball, but those momentum shifts are everything. And the games are completely different in the playoffs than they are the regular season.
Yeah.
The intensity is different. The line changes are different. How they're stacking up the teams are different. For us in baseball, the biggest thing that I took away from the playoffs was just the pitching. You see three starters. You'll see basically two starters win a five-game series, and then you'll see two to three guys out of the bullpen. You're seeing like six pitchers the entire for five-game series, and everybody is throwing. Everyone is on cloud nine. Everyone is absolutely throwing fuzz and their best stuff ever. That was the biggest pushback that I had. But like I said, the game has just changed. And like I said, you get a run on first base, you have momentum, it's a rally almost. You get a run on first base. In the regular season, it's not that. You get a guy on first base, like, oh, whoop-de-doo, walk, lead off walk, who cares, Oh, you got four in this inning, who cares, we'll come back. In a four-run inning in the playoffs, you might as well just shut it down because the pitching, like I said, everyone coming out of the pen is going to be unbelievable.
With baseball, I do want to ask you this, is that one thing I've always amazed about baseball players is how do you internalize the pressure? Meaning, I would watch you batting someone else on the Nats, standing ovation from the crowd or everybody screaming. How do you not get too excited? Because, as an athlete, I would get very excited during these moments and I would play worse. And a lot of guys they play better. It's crazy to me.
I would agree with that. I think the first two, the wild card game and the series in LA, about the first three innings, I'm not kidding at all. I could not grip the baseball because I'm not that sounds crazy, but I feel like I was in panic mode, especially versus Milwaukee, that first playoff game. That was, baptism by fire. It's a one game playoff, really good team rolling in there. And like I said, I was throwing the outfield in between innings. And I'm like, I hope to God this ball doesn't hit to me because I have no idea where it's going right now because I'm so not scared. Your body's just going through something that
it's like fight or flight or some kind of nervousness, really is. Right?
Like, yeah. Your body's just, in a different mode, but you don't feel that. You don't think that. Like, I was calm, cool the whole day. I felt great. I was, ready to play. I'm excited to play. And then all of a sudden you run out there and you have whatever chemical is going through your body, it just changes you. And like I said, and then as it progressed, you got to St. Louis Mm-hmm. I mean, it was almost like the first inning, that was the only feeling you had, where it was just like, and then you were so tired that it just, you know, just played throughout there. But then game, you know, game one of the World Series, I was taking pre-workout. I mean, I had to get up for those games.
Wow.
But the first little bit was, I mean, it was too much. You know, I had almost come down. I was trying to, you know, almost depressed than I was to, you know, ramp up. But then, like I said, you got the World Series, and I'm literally taking what we call P4, which is like our get up, you know, and go. And I'm taking a scoop of that before we get for game one of the World Series, because I'm like, I am so tired right now, I got to get going.
that makes sense, though. Now,
but
I do want to go back to an LCS really quick. Now, you know, you guys come, you win that. During that series, Ovi threw out the first pitch.
Yes, awesome.
That from the field, what was that like? And I, you guys won remarkably. And again, magic. This team was magic. Yeah. You guys won 8 straight games after that, mm-hmm. which feels.
I mean, whatever he touches turns to gold.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I didn't get as many hits as I'd like to after, you know, we shook hands. But I mean, maybe next time. But no, it was awesome for him to come out there, you know, and, you know, what's funny is usually the guys that play don't ever catch the first pitch. It's just kind of the rules. Sean is the name that, you know, she does all that first pitch stuff. And I think Howie heard her ask somebody else, like a pitcher, relief pitcher, like, wow. Hey, Ovi's throwing out the first pitch. Would you like to catch it? And Howie's like, hey, no, ask Adam. Like, Adam's a Caps fan and like, you're not going to ask him? And Sean's like, well, we don't ask starting guys. Howie's like, I guarantee if you ask him, he will make time for Ovi to go out there. And what's funny is she came up and she was like, Howie said to ask you. I don't want to ask you, but Howie asked you if you catch the first pitch for Ovi. I said, you know, effing right I will. Like, absolutely. This fires me up. She's like, I don't want to ruin your routine. I said, no, the routine's out. Like, I'm going to go catch the first pitch for Ovi. This fires me up. So pretty cool that, like I said, he was able to come out and crowd responded well to him. And like I said, in turn, you know, we kind of took off from there too as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was a series where you guys invented – when did you guys first come up with the clutch celebration? Was it earlier than that?
That was – you know what's funny is that Howie was hitting decently well. I was not hitting the hell that well power-wise. And I think like the first week of June – we went on a him and I are, you know, big car guys, and mm-hmm. We went to a Porsche experience in Atlanta. That was, wow. I think it was no exaggeration. I think it was a day or two before we turned it all around. And I, you know, everyone does their dancing and all that, you know, hoopla. And I'm like, well, I have no moves, Howie. I was like, we need to figure out something that we can do together, you know, in order to, you know, get boys fired up. He's like, well, we love to drive. Why don't we just, you know, go to the end of the bench, just, you know, rip through a couple gears, and that'd be fun. And no exaggeration, when we did that, I think I went from like 2 homers in 2 months to, I think I had like 10 in the next, you know, 2.5 months or something like that. And Howie took off as well. So it was just funny how something so crazy, you know, so, you know, minute kind of, you know, now is evolved into
a national,
you know,
phenomenon now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have our own, our own bobblehead now.
Yes. We need to show this off.
So yeah, I got all the boys over there, but I got this, which is us driving.
But, I have this.
Yeah,
big fan of this guy. Big fan of this guy.
Heck, oh, wait. Yeah.
Oh.
I was gonna say, Falco does an unbelievable job.
They do,
man. Like they're quality. Like they're sturdy. Like
they're not even paying us. They're not even paying us to do this. We just really like the bobbleheads.
They do, like I said, an unbelievable job. I have they sent me Max and Soto and Strauss and like I said, I have all the boys up in my of my thing. But like I said, pretty cool that. No, I mean, not crazy, but Howie is such an outstanding human being. And just for me to be on the same bench on a bobblehead with him is over the moon for me. Like I said, I have the highest respect for this guy, and he's one of the greatest human beings I've ever met. So like I said, to have him on a bobblehead, I'll cherish this forever. And like I said, it evolved into something that was pretty crazy. And like I said, now we have a bobblehead of it, and something that, for the rest of my life, I'll cherish. It's pretty cool.
And this one isn't half bad either, too. My son, really loves this one.
I was going to say.
Oh.
Para,
it's
baby shark thing.
Yeah, for people listening at home, it's a Gerardo Para bobblehead, where he has a baby shark bandana over his head, and a baby shark is coming out of the the ocean with a World Series Nationals baseball, which is amazing.
I'm surprised they didn't send me that one. I'm upset.
Man. Oh, we're we'll figure that out. All right. This is important stuff we need to be talking about right now. So then you guys clinch your first berth. Oh, wait. You guys celebrating winning the NLCS. I was amazed by how you guys turned the trophy into a drinking device. That was incredible.
We had the fault in the caps.
Now this is where you start seeing the caps, Nats, hockey celebration. I know you talked about too during the series how the team motivated you guys and they were kind of pulling for you. And how did that happen? Is that just one of those random things where you guys are just like, oh, let's do it? Or, you know, did you guys talk about like how you were going to celebrate? Or I don't know.
Are you talking about?
I forget what it's called. I actually wrote it down because I always forget. It is the Warren C. Giles Trophy.
So you're saying when we beat St. Louis, or are you talking about the Dodgers? I'm sorry.
The NLCS, right?
So I mean, not really. We don't. I mean, I feel like we're all spur of the moment. I don't know why. I never thought I would ever even hold any trophy. I don't think I'd ever, you know, even be in the big leagues or doing that stuff. So it's all spur of the moment. But like I said, I think the Cavs again kind of set that precedent just to enjoy that time. We don't have anything as cool as Lord Stanley. I've been on the record many times before. I think that's the coolest trophy in all of sports. You know, where you can literally eat cereal out of and put babies in it and party with it and hold it over. But like I said, we just try to get creative with it and whatever we could do with any of the trophies. You know, anything time you can pour beer down it and try to drink out of anything, I think it's pretty cool.
Do you remember anything from the celebration then that you found like particularly funny looking back? I mean, Sean Doolittle getting his Star Wars groove on. I think he brought lightsabers. I mean, everybody had a personality of their own prop when they celebrated. Didn't Trey Turner have like the gigantic like ski glasses?
He's from NC State. So he had like a football helmet on. Then he had a rugby helmet on. Max had two different color eyes, his shields. But then, like I said, Doolittle has his lightsaber. Like I said, everyone kind of had their own little prop. I don't really remember much from it, to be honest with you. I think it was just really what was just enjoying
what was the everybody. What was the feeling inside the locker room after you guys won?
It's not that it's bittersweet, but it's one of those things where, okay, this is really cool. We could, you know, this is part of the check it off, you know, check off the box. It's almost like getting a hit, you know, if you get out, you're upset, but if you get a hit, you're checking the box. Now we move on to the next one. It was the same thing for that. It was like, we need to enjoy this, have some fun, you know, but we're checking the box and we're going to move on to the next round and, you know, who we're going to prepare for next. So it was one of those things where guys, I didn't go all out. You know, drinking, and I think a lot of guys didn't. You know, you're spraying, you're having a few drinks, but it's not like this is not the final, this is not the finish line, this is just a stepping stone onto the next one. So I think, like I said, a lot of guys enjoy themselves, spray some champagne, I may have had two drinks, and then like I said, we need to prepare for the next round. So I think, like I said, I think guys enjoyed themselves, but you know, the eye on the prize type mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. Then you go into the World Series, you're facing off against a perennial power in Houston. You know, looking back now with the, you know, I know everybody's kind of going on the record about the cheating scandal and stuff like that. Looking back now, do you see any moments where you look back and go, or anything like that?
Well, we knew about it.
Go into that. Like,
yeah. I don't know how much I want to go into.
Sure. I don't particularly want to make too much news with that part, but just as a fan, I'm interested.
We knew about it fairly early, not just that year, but you know, security things have been changed, things have been moved around. You know, where we knew there was something going on, and they were. Like I said, I don't want to go too far into it. Like I said, I don't know what has been said and what hasn't been said. I try to stay off media as much as I can for the most part. But like I said, we knew about it. We knew what the, you know, what was going on. And so we made adjustments on it. We were already ahead of it, as most teams were, especially in 19. So going into it, we weren't really afraid of it because we knew how to, compound, I guess, not compound, but, you know, we knew what to do. We knew how to switch signs up. We knew basically that there was some sort of relay system that we, like I said, wanted to try to get ahead of, and was an issue for us. So, and that's nothing different than anywhere else. You get, yeah, you get to some places, you get some guys that are on second base. There's, you know, it's not, it's nothing crazy. It's not like we had, you know, a 30-minute meeting on how we're going to compound this. It's basically, let's just switch up our signs. Let's keep things moving. If you see guys that are on some stuff, let's switch it up. Let's do different sequences and, you know, go from there. So it wasn't anything crazy, but, you know, what I thought was huge going into the World Series was our time off. A lot of people thought it was going to hinder us, but having an older, we're the oldest team in the big leagues. I think having the oldest team in the big leagues, I think it was huge. You think maybe have a little younger team, you have to take some time off. Some guys may not use that time as efficiently as we did. I thought that all of our pitchers really needed it. A lot of innings, a lot of hard innings going down the stretch. And to get the, I don't even know what it was, 5 to 7 days that we had off, I think was huge. You know, Howie's old, I mean, you name it on our roster besides the two guys in the outfield and Trey are older. So to have some time off, you know, and pick up right where we left off, I think was huge. And then taking the first two games at their place, I think was big as well. So I think besides everything throughout the whole playoffs was picture perfect, except that we did not win a game at home for the World Series. I know that sounds crazy.
That's weird. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I think as a reason, honestly, I think I never really buy into like nervous or expectations or trying to win for like a group of people. But when we came home, that's all we were thinking about was like, we're home. These people want us to win so badly. Let's give it to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that just, it went against us. I think it was, we were more nervous than we were on the road. When we were on the road, we were like, it was a simple group. We're in the hotel. We go to the stadium, we play. When we're at home, it was just a lot of, not a hoopla, but you know, you're, it's like, oh, we have arrived. You know, you're pulling into the stadium. There's, you know, 150 people out there, 200 people out there. And it's like, you know, it's just a different feel. But when we went on the road, it was just a different, you know, mentality, you know, kind of road warriors. And I think that the combination of all the craziness and wanting to win for our fans so badly, I think is the reason we didn't win one at home. But it worked out all right.
What do you remember from the first game at home, like of the World Series? I know there was so much anticipation and excitement.
I think that was exactly right. You know, national anthem, just being introduced in front of all the home fans, you know, being up two games, kind of having a little bit of, you know, not that we run it or any stretch by that, you know, by that sort, but just that we felt confident. You know, we're coming home, you know, we're going to give the people what they want, and that's a win. And, you know, we knew Houston was a really good team, and that, you know, back of our mind that they're going to push back eventually, just, you know, when is it going to happen? And you know, we found out in three games that they were going to go quietly.
Yeah. I know during the series too, Juan Soto, I mean, everything from God, his crotch grabs to his, to his, I guess his lunges. I call him the lunges. But that kid, how good is that kid?
He's awesome. He is a terrific human being on top of that. That's what I love about him. He's going to be extremely special for a long time. You see a lot of people that are talented but don't have quite the humility. And which is funny because when he gets in a box, it just, there's something that just turns where he doesn't have humility anymore. He just wants to just rip the pitcher's face off. But he's just a really good teammate. He's a good person. He respects the older guys. He not falls in line, but he's just one of the guys. He doesn't try to separate himself. He doesn't try to big league anybody. He's himself. And it works out really well. Robles falls right in line with that same exact type of talent, but he's both those players are going to be really good for a very long time. And I think DC's, you know, lucky to have him, to be honest with you. Very lucky to have him.
I was blown away by just how many big hits, big homers that Howie Kendrick had. I know you've already spoken about him, but, you know, it seems like he's towards the tail end of his career and he's probably hit.
He's at the end of his career.
Yeah, that's the most locked in he's ever been though, almost. Like, it just, like, every time he came up, it was either a homer, a double, just cranking the extra base hits. So you guys go down, you're in game seven, you know, for all the marbles. You get an amazing pitching performance from Max Scherzer, who comes back. I consider that a hockey performance where, you know, a guy was hurt, comes back, has an amazing outing. I know you hit a home run in game six, and then you hit a double to give the Nats breathing room in game seven. What was that like for you?
It was a single with the bases loaded in game seven. You're fine. It's fine.
Did you imagine that as a kid, like game seven World Series? You're the one coming through. You got a bobblehead made of you now. I mean, what is that like?
I'm just surreal, to be honest with you. I think, never in my wildest dreams. I mean, even going Division I baseball, like my whole goal when I was a kid was to make high school baseball as a freshman. Like that was it. Just make the team. Expectations were never over the moon. And I don't know if that was just because of how I was raised. I don't know if that was just how my parents, what instilled in me was like, you know, they never told me you're going to play in the big leagues one day. It was more of, let's just go step by step, you know, try to be the best here, be the best that you can. So, you know, of course you're in the, you know, the backyard, you had a game winning World Series. I was probably Kenny Lofton, you know, in the mid-90s was huge for the Indians. So I was a big Kenny Lofton fan. I was Kenny in the backyard, but, no, never in my wildest dreams would I ever be in the World Series. I mean, really in the big leagues, be in the World Series, hit two homers in the World Series, you know, hit, a single in game seven to really push it. Like never in my wildest dreams. Like I said, I live in an absolute fantasy land. So to do it is, like I said, beyond any of what my mind would ever have thought of, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. So how do you get to the last couple of outs? I know from the Zoom call, I learned that Yan Gomes kept the baseball. How did the guys feel about that too? Because I know Brooks Orpik has, I believe, the Capitals winning Stanley Cup puck.
Yeah, no, for me, you hate to see. Not that ownership or the organization, they get a lot of the stuff. They get, you know, which as they should, you know, it's big for them. It's, you know, it's. At the end of the day, they run things, you know, they're paying all of us, but it's pretty cool for one of the players to be able to have a piece of team history. Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. I hope Jan keeps that in a really safe place. I told him to cut it up in 25 pieces and just give it to all of us. It's priceless to him. So why not share it with the rest of us? But, like I said, I think it's pretty neat that he was able to hide that ball away and be able to take it home.
That's tough. Then you guys celebrate. Yeah. What were your feelings kind of running off the field and when that happened?
You know, they showed a video of me and certain thoughts ran through my mind when we got two outs, because the whole way through you're so funneled. Your mind is so just ramped up on the next day, the next pitcher. How are we going to get another win? How are we going to do this? How are we going to bounce back? It's never the big picture. It's never like I'm in the World Series. It's never that thought. It was just always so narrow minded. So game seven, when I got the hit, that was the first time I was able to really let emotion out, where it's like, we're going to win this thing. Like that's the first time I was able to just like, you know, have some excitement. Like I said, then two outs in the ninth inning, I'm like, I'm still not thinking like, we're definitely going to win this. It's you're sitting there like, this is pretty cool. What am I going to do? you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I've never thought about this before in my life. Like I had no plan. And so I blacked out. I've literally blacked out when the last thing, I guess I put my glove on my head and I was running. I don't remember that at all. I honestly don't remember that at all. I just knew that I wanted to celebrate with Robles and Soto, amongst everybody else. But those two guys have came so far. They call me Papa or Grandfather. Those are my two nicknames for me, just because, you know, every step of the way, every struggle that any of us have had, we've done it together as a group with the three of us. And they're 21, well, they're 20 and 21 at the time. Now they're 21, 22, or 23. Well, I'm one of the two, but they're very young guys. And, like I said, to be able to celebrate with them at such a young age and like, you know, when spring training, to see them grow throughout the year and they make a bonehead play one day and then the next day they'd make the exact same play and they make it right.
And that's like, awesome. Yeah.
But you see those guys literally grow, go along. It's so fun to be able to do that. So like I said, when the World Series and we won, I'm like, man, I just want to hug these guys because it's amazing how far we've come. and how young they are and how much I respect them. So to be able to, you know, like I said, hug those guys, were the first guys I hugged, was basically all that was on my mind.
Now, inside the locker room, you guys celebrate. Again, you try to drink out of the World Series trophy. Yeah. Amazing. I don't, like, kind of just sliding it in well. A little bit. Doolittle called it a piece of tin or a piece of metal. So, you know, everybody saw the celebrations and things like that. You come home. What happens for you guys after you come home and after? Because, you know, with the Capitals, for instance, I think they went to a Tiesto concert in Vegas. They were just drinking all night long. I remember they flew home at like 1 p.m. the next day, which was delayed by like 6 hours. Just the whole thing was a sloppy mess for them.
Yeah,
where so. It feels like you guys were a little bit more professional about it. Maybe. I don't know if professional is the right word, but.
Maybe they're setting precedent. That's more professional now. But, you know, what's interesting is I it's no one's fault or anything, but I feel like we were one of the more subdued teams to ever win. Usually when you have that team, you have the people going on, you know, the Tonight Show and going on, you know, in the morning shows. And it just seemed like that never happened. You know, people just kind of went off to their own hometowns.
Yeah, it did.
And that was, and then even in spring training, you know, the Houston thing all happened. I think we had like three reporters open, you know, the first day, four reporters, like four cameras or whatever. Like I said, I think just it's crazy because I feel like meeting, you know, being in DC is kind of the mecca of politics, but maybe that was a reason why we weren't so highly regarded media wise throughout the nation. Like I said, we not many guys got, you know, kind of that publicist, you know, type push. But, you know, I came home. It was funny is that we drank for, what was it, four straight days? My body started to fight back at the end of that fourth day. And, you know, you come home and I'm thinking to myself, finally, I can go to sleep and I can, you know, get my, you know, 8 hours of sleep. But I just came home and I just kept drinking because all the people at my house, everyone's coming over drinking and we're in the basement having a good time. And it's like I drank for another week after I got home and I'm like, people, leave me alone. Just give me a reprieve right now. Give me a couple days and we can go party later. But no, it's awesome. You know, so many people have a hand in everyone's career. You know, it's not just you that go through that. So, you know, to be able to share it with my mom and dad, you know, people that are, you know, closest to me and you know, contact and talking to a lot of the, you know, folks from home, pretty cool to be able to share it with them. And, like I said, neat to be able to have some, you know, fond memories and a few drinks with them and enjoy it and have some stories.
Does the MLB send you guys, anything to commemorate it? Like I know the NHL sends many Stanley Cups that are like this big for award that anybody wins. And I guess a follow up question to that too would be, this sounds really funny, but like, do players like maybe see like memorabilia from the World Series that they're selling? Like, do you keep anything? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, we don't get anything from Major League Baseball. You know, we out of pocket, you buy, I have like a replica, full-size replica. And it's actually just a random guy that contacted one of our BP throwers that we went through. So we did that. And then, the memorabilia part, there's a select few of us that got memorabilia deals afterwards. Mm-hmm. So you sign a bunch of, Fanatics. And we signed a bunch of different things, different items for them. Fanatics to thank us, sent us one like plaque, with basically what was it? Maybe like 12 to 15 of the guys' signatures, which
awesome.
Is pretty cool. But besides that, I mean, I got my shoes. I only wore two pairs of home and away during the World Series, my bat. I never got my home run ball back. Neither one of my home run balls I never got back.
Okay, we're putting a signal out for that. You would like one of your home run balls.
Yeah. Let me know what you need. I have two baseballs from the World Series. One was a ball to me.
Yeah.
Besides that, like I said,
isn't that funny? Isn't that funny that it's like the biggest moment of your career and it's hard to get stuff? I know with the Stanley Cup stuff they sold it too, and it's hard to get your hands on it.
It's crazy. Yeah, you'd think. One second, I need the charger, so I'm gonna text my wife. Hopefully she gets that. but it's amazing to me that you would think that guys would Braden, no, get out. Please go. We got naked kids running throughout the house again.
See
just
what
like
I mean.
We were talking about. Hey, can I get the charger for the computer, please? It's fiasco around here.
No, that's okay. It's okay.
You'd think that, yeah, this is the biggest moment in our career, biggest moment in our life, and you would think that you would get something like, hey, here's some dirt from Houston. I mean, here's something you can take along with you.
I can actually send this to you if you want.
How'd you get this? Look at that. How in the world?
They sold it for like, I think a month on MLB.com and I grabbed it. Yeah. I'm serious. If you give me your address, I will send this to you.
No, seriously.
I have two. You can have this.
I don't have that one. I don't have anything in here, but I might have some on my spikes from a couple of the games. But like I said, pretty crazy that you don't get much. I think we got a jersey. But like I said, nothing really from the game, unfortunately. But thank you. But like I said, nonetheless, I lived it, and
That's the coolest part, obviously.
Yeah,
part that really matters.
Like I said, pretty cool that you got some dirt, though.
No, I'll send that to you. Seriously, I'll send that.
No,
to you.
You don't have to. But it's, you got some ice from the.
Oh, I have that as well. Yes, I have that as well. I'm a collector. Honestly, I don't know if you can see it in the back, but I told you about this on DM. Let me move my chair. This is the hood from the Armin B car. That's about as best I can do right now.
That is sweet.
From the Dover race where Ryan. So the whole story about that was so we sponsored Ryan Ellis, who's one of our readers, who's a Washington Capitals fan, grew up in Ashburn, Virginia, and he ended up getting into NASCAR. And so we raised over $10,000 with our readers through a hockey tournament to get him into the race. So we got to be the first sponsor. And he said with the hood that I couldn't have it because the team needed it. The team was very poor. And it was like, the only way you can have it is if I accidentally crash. And Ryan was nice enough to get a concussion that day at Dover.
So I could
have the shattered hood. But it's
wonder if your rumor's giving it to you.
I kind of feel guilty about
you
that.
You said that's awesome.
Actually, I was gonna leave this for the end, but I wanted to tell you this now. Ryan saw that you left a comment on our Instagram about iRacing.
Okay.
First, my first question for you is, do you iRace?
I do not. I've been trying to acquire a simulator.
Okay.
I'm finding out they're really, really expensive.
If you don't have a simulator, Ryan will help you get one. And
if you
get it in time, Ryan would like you to race on his Friday night races with other NASCAR drivers. And he wanted me to invite you. And that was kind of our thank you for doing
myself.
This. You might, but you'll always remember it.
Sure.
You'll always remember it. Ryan's been racing under our car, and he got in like this Italy racetrack, and he got flipped into the trees. so he sends me a screenshot of my car in the trees.
It's good publicity.
Yeah, I was like, hey, all right, that's really stupid. I love it. He's having fun though, and I've really admired how. You know, with like hockey, tried to get by the coronavirus pandemic by doing simulations, and it was cool, but it's computer generated.
Yeah,
when you actually see the NASCAR drivers literally in their own like stalls driving in these like trifold like screens, it has a feeling of a real race.
Sure, those simulators are impressive. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done quite a bit of research on them, and Michael Taylor and I went to do some simulating stuff in New York.
Wow.
It's amazing what they can do with virtual reality and those simulators and the vibrations and, you know, the car, the wheel correcting and kind of feeling the rear end of the car come out, like the oversteer and the understeer. It's amazing what they can do with those simulators. So, and it seems like a lot of the race car drivers now to learn, the environment. So they go onto a track, you know, they're going to put the type of day that they're going to be racing in. This is what it is. This is what time of day it is. And then, you know, do some testing with it. It's pretty remarkable what they can do.
I've asked about it. And a lot of the guys say that it's something that they do on a Tuesday or Wednesday re-familiarize themselves with the turns and when to brake and when to come on the throttle and stuff like that. And,
it's unbelievable.
So we're going to work to get you one and get out there once.
Come on.
I can't make any promises, and you got you let and Ryan have to talk.
Let me lease it for a week, and then I'll send it back. That's awesome. I appreciate you doing that. That's awesome.
Absolutely. No, we're really appreciative for your support, and I think too, having a World Series champion in a race would give them some more cred too. And I think NASCAR is a sport. I grew up on it. Hilariously enough, my family always loved it, and it was really popular back in the day with Dale Earnhardt, Rusty Wallace,
Dale Jarrett,
and he was owned by Joe Gibbs, so a lot of people loved him in this area, and it just kind of fell off. Like the popularity of the sport has really fallen off. And I think they're starting to realize that iRacing can kind of be, and video games are kind of their vehicle, so to speak, to get back into it. And so I think you would be doing them a huge solid too, but I will get you guys in talking about that. So
love it.
Back before we got sidetracked by racing, which I told you would happen. So you guys have the parade. I remember it was a cold day. I was there too. What was that experience like for you, just to see that many people come out in DC and just be losing their mind with you guys?
Very cool. They started out, families of course are all there, which is pretty special for us to be able to experience that with our families. I did a burnout, which is pretty cool. I was able to do that. I'm just sitting there, had a couple drinks, not too many at that time, which hopefully don't get anybody in trouble. But not that many. But I see there's a ZL1, which is the bigger horsepower Camaro, and then an SS Camaro. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go down there and just see if they'll let me do a burnout on Constitutional. So I'm like, I go down there. I'm like, hey, can I do a burnout? And they're like, absolutely. And I'm like, I can't believe they're going to let me do a burnout right now on a public street with all these people around. I was like, this is unbelievable. This is so dangerous, but you're going to let me do this. I'm fired up. So I lay into it. I'm up there on the limiter, and I don't hit the limit because you'll do that. But I just keep going. I'm like, you let me know when I have to stop. And I bet you, it was like 10 to 15 seconds, a good burnout. I bet you there's a dent still there. It has to be. I mean, I was in the pavement. I wasn't moving, and felt the whole thing full of smoke. And what's funny is I was getting about 10 text messages from all the teammates. We're like, where's all this? It smells like tires back here. Are you doing a burnout? Like, they all knew it was me, which is ironically enough. And like I said, what a cool experience to be able to do that. And then just seeing all the people, I don't know how far we went, but however many blocks you went. But as you got close to the stage, you just see a red. I mean, there's red everywhere. Even on the buildings, you see or stair steps to buildings. Like, every bit of the stairs are all covered up. Then the top, you see people have kids on their shoulders. It's just sea of red everywhere. It's as far as you can see. There's no concrete or pavement. I mean, there's all these people. So, so awesome to be able to, like I said, have a few beers, enjoy it with those people. And then, you have the ceremony where all of us are pretty well, done in and just trying to enjoy it. We opened up the hotline for the ceremony.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Just something that we do. We do that quite a bit, on the bus and, plane flights and whatnot, just to, to be able to enjoy it with the guys. So, like I said, to be able to do that and have everyone, say hi, to bring Tony Rendon back and, have Skip now, up there.
At that point, what did you guys know? Because usually there's
about
some...
Anthony?
Yeah, so usually there's some kind of inkling that it's probably going to happen or not.
What's interesting is there was two places I thought he would go, one including D.C., and he didn't go to either one of them. And Tony and I are relatively close. Not one conversation had where he went to Anaheim, which is interesting to me. Great for him, great for his family, happy for him. I think he's one of the greater human beings I've ever met as well. Really down to earth, really relaxed, great family. And like I said, more power to him to go and try to, enjoy California, but very surprising to a lot of us, to say the least. But, that's Tony though. Tony, keep you guessing. So like I said, love him for it, but, good luck to him. Excited for him. Like I said, worked hard for it.
As a media person, I enjoyed that because obviously it's up to him. He's earned the right to play wherever he wants. He had an amazing year, deserved every dollar that he got. But it's also like, usually people don't talk about it, people shy away from it.
Sure.
And I thought, I went to art school, like you guys kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit to be like, we really want you back, and we really love you as a teammate.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, no, and we did. And we did. We wanted him back and wanted him as a teammate. But again, he, you can't, like you said, you can't blame him.
You know,
whatever you think's best for your family. And like, that's what we've been keeping it at. And that's, it's so true, you know, because if the roles are reversed, I'm never going to be as good as Tony, but if roles are reversed and you know, you leave and you think this is the best decision for your family, that's the best decision for your family. Mm-hmm. Just it's all in the eye of the beholder. But like I said, credit to him that, you know, every single one of us just really enjoyed our time with him and wanted him back. And like I said, kind of, you know, all part of the business.
I'll share a story with you that I think is a parallel for Rendon, kind of in the opposite way, is that I remember Devontae Smith-Pelly re-signed with the Capitals to help defend the Cup last year. And by the end of he had a, I think it was a multi-year contract that he left on the table to sign a one-year deal with the Caps. And by the end of the season, he's in the minors. And it's just one of those things where, you're just crazy. Like, it's like, if you think with your heart sometimes, you know, this is your one chance. And if you do that, it's something that, you know, anyways, that's a not fun topic.
No. Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you go like, you're watching the Bulls,
but Scottie Pippen, you know, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, it's so, this is a, such a bad area for me to go into. But it's just tough. You know, when you're not in those shoes, it's hard to have an opinion on the matter, especially when it comes to it. It's just very difficult when you're underpaid, but you're still making millions of dollars. It's hard, but you know, you've worked. I don't know. Like I said, it's hard. It's hard avenue for me to go into.
No, I know like where you can't. There's no way where you can say something right. But I just want you to know. I was just putting that out there for Tony. Is that you know? It's just it's just one of those things where you have to do the right thing for your family.
So we
get out of the parade. That was really fun, and this is the finale of our conversation here. one of my favorite Capital games of all time. You guys went to Capital One Arena to celebrate your championship, just like the Caps did at Nats Park. And I want every detail of this. Like, how did that even happen? Like, when did you hear? Like, how did you guys get there? Was it on? Because I remember the Caps came on like a party bus to Nats Park. Like, was it similar with you guys? Like, how did it go?
Similar. So we came with this. Honestly, that was the best night for me. It was.
I bet. Yeah.
I love the parade, but this was way. It was better than the parade, and the reason it was better than the parade was because. And there's no offense to any of the families, but it was the last time that we could have everybody together, just the boys, just the boys. It was just all, there was the roster. There was no wives, no kids, no nothing. It was just the boys. Let's go. We're going to go to the game. We're going to take a bus. Let's drink. We have no problem getting home. No, nothing. Just enjoy the night. We took a bus over. We came underneath Zim, you know, read the card. So I went underneath, you know, see Blaine, see some of the guys. And I did the Oshi chug.
Wait. How? Okay, so like I know a few people that have tried it. I'm not saying if I have, but that is a very hard thing to do. I hear. How does one do the Oshi chug? I mean, was there practice involved? Like I don't even know. I would have all the alcohol just coming down the shirt. You know, if I tried it.
It's all a shirt. The hockey jersey did not go well because it's very thick. And that I feel like with, you know, how hockey guys sweat and the, you know, you're trying to keep everything in the smell, the sweat, everything with the hockey jersey. It's tough. They're very thick, but I think it all dictates on what shirt you're wearing, but just get some good flow going and you know, just let it eat, I guess. And this is my only tidbits, but that was
a breathable
cool.
shirt. Yeah,
exactly. Breathable shirt. Yeah.
That's what we learned today.
Basketball shirt's probably the best one.
All right, okay.
Anyways, like I said, Zim read the card. You know, they had we gave him a helmet. Probably 2 weeks to a month before another player game.
I'm gonna test them on this. Is that all of you guys signed it? And I swear, by the end of the year, just smudges everywhere. And the memorabilia collector in me is like screaming internally, like, well, this is a piece of history.
No, that's the cool part.
Okay.
That's just adding to it. I think that makes it even cooler that now you have the fingerprints, all the guys on your in the helmet, but that's cool. I think Warren piece of history is pretty cool, but
absolutely.
They donated the helmet on the West Coast. There was like a family, I forget. You might not, I don't know if you know the story.
I don't know the story, but I do broadly know of it that happened like in Los Angeles or something.
I think it was something West Coast, something to a hospital or something. They raffled it off or gave it to charity or whatever it was. So when we came back, we of course brought him another helmet, signed it all. And, you know, Zim came in, read the card. They didn't really expect another helmet, but it was cool to be able to come in, see him again. And, you know, give them what they want with the OC chug. So.
You got the boys going. All right. I tried. I gotta say, that set the tone for that night. Like it really did.
They played well. They did.
You guys enjoyed it too. So that night, first, I know Verana scores the hat trick, but first pregame, you guys all go out in the ice. You guys take the photo together out in the ice. I don't even know to ask here. What is going on? What is being said? What are you feeling? So was that the first time you've been at ice level with a crowd like that?
Yes, it was the first time I've been ice level. You know how big the guys are, but when they put skates and everything on, Ovi is like, I mean, that man, he is a like again, you know, RMNB. I mean, he is a mountain of a man. Yes. Like, he is huge. And when he has his skates on and he has his pads on and he just comes over, and I was blessed enough to go on a knee right next to him. And he like held on to me, like, cause he was fired up that we were out there. He like, I mean, like, I'm like, don't break me, man. Like, hey, you know, he's like, you know, strong arming me. And, but just to be out there, you see Wilson, how big he is on the ice too. Oh, yeah. It's like, why would you ever want to mess with any of these guys is beyond me. It just shows you how, you know, I love hockey, but how crazy some of these guys are, and just the intensity that, you know, you're skating at 25 mile an hour, all of a sudden a break fights out, you know, and these guys are just huge. It's just amazing how these guys can collide with other guys and whatnot. But just being on the ice, the lights, you know, and then those guys, like I said, kind of embracing us, taking a picture with it. And, like I said, fired us up, you know, I think everybody left the ice just like chattering about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're just like, that was a really cool experience. That was like, we're all like wide eyed. Like that was freaking cool.
We had no idea what the plan was for that, by the way. So that was a complete surprise. And I loved how, like, you got Backstrom and they got Ovi and Zimmerman together. Two of probably the greatest, you know, DC players ever sitting right beside each other. It was such an iconic moment that I think, like, in the lexicon of DC sports, they're going to be playing that again and again, you know, when I have way more gray hair than I do now. and so you guys go up, you get the suite. I'll say it started a little timid, but it picked up considerably later in the night. I'm trying to remember some of the things that happened, but
me too.
There was a lot of, there was a lot of dancing. I'm trying to see if I could find some of this stuff.
Yeah, as the game progressed, you know, like I said, we started drinking, having a good time. Then all of a sudden, guys started pouring beers over on the suites. Like, fans were coming up and saying, like, pour some beer in my mouth. So, funny enough, we started pouring beer in these people's mouths, and the lady that was kind of like our chaperone that was in charge of us was like, no, you can't do that. And we're like, no, we can, like, and we're going to, and we just, like, the people just kept literally they're lining up until, like, I think security kind of shut that down.
Go ahead. I'm not stopping the story.
What were you saying? No, you're fine. So, I guess it's all coming back to me, but go ahead.
There was dancing in the suite. There was the drinking like that. Then you go down. I think it was I don't remember what period. You go down. Verana scores a hat trick while you have the World Series trophy, and they were about to bring you back on the ice again. And so I remember this actually became one of our most read stories of the year last year, Adam Eaton, was you started taking the hats after they cleaned them up and started throwing them back on the ice, which was an amazing moment. But while you're holding the World Series trophy, it's so surreal, you know?
So what the interesting thing is that I know Verana has two goals, and we go underneath to get on the Zamboni. So we're going underneath. It's you might know better than I do. It's pretty mazy in there.
You think you know
where you are, but you really don't know where you are. So I'm going, all of a sudden I hear the horn, and I just happen to have the World Series trophy. I'm trying to carry it as much as I can. I have the World Series trophy, and I hear the horn. I'm like, no way. Let's see if he scored. And I'm like, I'm running with the World Series trophy, and I get to wherever it was. And what was funny, it was at the end. I don't know who was a goaltender at the time, but he was at the end, and I'm like, oh, sweet. So I'm like, run up there, and I think I was shooting him with the World Series trophy, and then I threw my hat on there. I don't know where my hat went, and then people start throwing hats to me, so I'm throwing their hats on there. They're sweeping hats to me. I'm still throwing it out there. I'm trying to hit him with it. I'm like, I was blacked out.
An unplanned moment, wasn't it? That was unplanned.
Like I said, I heard the horn, and I'm thinking, like, amazing. Hey, this could be a hat trick. I'm like, I'm gonna go check this thing out, because it is. I don't even know what hat I had on, but it's gone. Like, this is. I've waited for this moment my whole life. And like I said, I went out there, and funny security. Took me away too, because I was like, everyone was fired up, and I'm turning around. I'm loving this moment right here. And security's like, all right, Adam, come on, you got the Zamp. They're gonna close up. Let's go.
I remember this moment from you. You're doing like you're mowing them down like you're Dave Bautista in your WWE intro. All right, so then you go back, that's amazing. Didn't know that. So you go back, you find the boys. Second intermission. But now I'm gonna give you some context. Evgeny Kuznetsov does an interview during the second intermission, and he says you hear some like screaming in the background, which is obviously you guys going just wilding out. And he looks at you guys and kind of smiles, and he says something along the lines of, you know, these guys are really tame. You know, I wouldn't have remembered anything. I don't remember anything from the Nats Park night. And so then NBC Sports Washington shows the Zamboni going out, and you guys are all clothed. Now, something happened in the Zoom meeting, which is context, which is new to me. So, what happened with Ryan Zimmerman? So six of you were on one Zamboni. Go ahead.
So actually, before we went in Zamboni, I will credit myself for getting the idea to go in the Zamboni. The chaperone, the same lady that told us that he couldn't pour beer in everyone's mouth, I went up to her, I said, we got to get on the Zamboni, period. Like, I don't care what it takes, we're getting on the Zamboni. And she's like, no, there's already people that are in line. They literally get, you know, months in advance for these things. Like, they either have paid for it or they're, you know, this. I'm like, I don't care. Like, get us on the Zamboni. This is our day. Like, this happens like once, and I'm like 1930. I probably said the wrong date. I'm like, it's been a long time. We're going. So we went down there, and funny enough, there's six seats on the one Zamboni, and then there's a single. And she goes down there and, like, you know, goes with the people that are driving the Zamboni, and she's like, they want on the Zamboni, and the guy's like, hey, these people already did. You know, they have their thing. You can ask them to see what they say. But I have no promise you're going to get on. I'm like, we're getting on. Like, let's go. So the funny thing is the six guys that I think they're like some corporate, maybe they sponsored something. I don't know what it was.
Yeah. Giant Food or something.
Yeah. So I was like, hey, do you mind if we take, you know, the Zamboni? They're like, absolutely, take it. Like, I was like, let's get a picture. And they each got an individual picture. And then we got a group picture with, you know, whatever.
Okay, that's a great trade. I would have done that trade in a minute.
So, me too. Like, if I'm a hockey fan, baseball, if the Stanley Cup came by and I'm like, you know, Ovi, I'm not Ovi, but, you know, some players came up. Yeah, heck yeah, go on the Zamboni. I can do that any day of the week. Let's do this right now. So then Zim had it's got to go for this girl. I think she was like, I don't know how old she was. She wasn't very old. 10, maybe 8, 10, 12 years old, maybe 12. And he had went up to her and was like, excuse me, like, do you mind if I take your Zamboni ride? She's like, well, it's my birthday. and I think Zim went to the effect, well, we won this trophy over here, and we should take it out. And I think, like, her parents were down there, and they, like I said, they did the same exact trade. But I think they're more reluctant than the guys in corporate. But so funny. And then, like I said, we hop on the Zamboni. And we're fired up, man. We're like, yeah, this is gonna be awesome. I can't wait. Let's give them a show. And Jan Gomes was like, you know what we should do is we should take our shirts off like Dozier, and we should, like, you know, fire them up and, you know, do what we need to do, hold the trophy. And the Zamboni driver heard it. And he's like, no, you can't do that. If you do anything like that, I gotta come right back in, and we cannot have that out there. And Jan's like, well, how many times around do you go? He's like, I go three. I was like, well, as you make that second to the third turn, you got to go all the way down to come back. You can't cut across, right? And he's like, yep. And he's like, all right, cool. And he's like, that's what we're doing, boys. When we make that second turn, you should see on the, I don't know the video, I don't remember, but it must have been right around, or maybe right as we went around, we did it and we had a full turn. But yep, we, like I said, took our shirts off. I don't know why. Again, probably just Dozier, just trying to be like Dozier. And
yeah, I'd say it was you. It was you holding the trophy. Jan, yeah. Sean Doolittle, Trey Turner, Max Scherzer. I don't know who the other person was. And then I remember Zem stayed clothed. He has his hands out.
He was dad. He wasn't allowed. He'd get in trouble. The man can't be doing.
He was your angry father looking at you like.
Yeah. He didn't want the dad bod to be out there. Stay clothed. But he's like I said. I remember us looking at him. He was like, "What in the world are you guys doing?" We're like, "Hey, apparently you can do whatever you want when you win the World Series. So we're gonna take full advantage of it." And like I said, we came back underneath. And just like I said, I think everyone either was like, what are they doing? Or was like absolutely loving it. We went back underneath. This is a crazy story, but the connection of the story, we got off the Zamboni and we were I don't know why I'm always carrying the trophy, but I'm carrying the trophy and I see the room where the refs are. Okay. So I'm like, oh, we're going in there for sure. We're going in there. We go in there and we get a picture with all the referees. Yeah.
All right. Wait. You have to send me some of the photos from that night.
I'll send you one. I'll send you one. Yeah. I got this photo. I didn't even get this photo, funny enough. But I was in spring training this spring. The spring training I was there, I ran into an NHL referee. Crazy story. You know, one of his, I don't know, you wouldn't call him line mates. What would you call a referee that's on the...
It's the officials in the line, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Official line or whatever. Yeah. That's with him. Was on this group picture. So he actually sent the picture of all of us. You just were wasted in this picture, but I actually got the picture from the referee. So I'm in with the referees now, which is good. I'm going to start sliding some money to them just, you know, when they play us. But so funny enough, I got that picture. Then we went to the cheerleading ice scraping girl room.
Yeah.
We got pictures with them. Like I said, basically everyone we ran into, we're like, let's take a picture with them. And so,
I want whatever you got because I think it's just one of those.
Let me see if I can look it up. You can keep talking. Sure. I should have it.
It might take 10 hours to scroll to go back. Like that's my camera. Photos of sun, photos of sun, my cats, photo of sun. So I was covering this. And so from my general experience, you know, this is the type of stuff that we cover. You know, we cover the things that people really enjoy and love. And, you know, everybody was just so excited for you guys. And then seeing that much joy, you know, Capitals fans connected how the Capitals partied. And then when they saw you guys going at it like that, I mean, there was just this pure joy that everyone shared that was just so awesome. Like, I think the hockey fans were like, you know, we really rubbed off on this team. You know what I mean? Like, we really influenced this team to really let go because it was pretty buttoned up before that. You know, I was writing and I was like, oh, that's as crazy as tonight was going to get. Nope. So you guys end up in the locker room. And
before that.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Before that, yeah. So we started taking a round of the suites just because. I don't know why, but we started taking around the suites. Brandon Brown is actually another NASCAR driver. He's in the Xfinity Series on Saturdays usually. And he's also does the iRacing stuff too. But he's a Northern Virginia guy. He actually happened to be there and, we went in the suite with him and let his family hold the trophy. And so Brandon got to, you know, get some pictures with the trophy, follow him on Instagram too. Good friend. But, so we ran into him. We ran into a lot of people that are kind of influential in DC and I can't remember any of them, but it was crazy.
Did you see Ted?
No, not Ted. But like I said, we went around just knocking on all the suite doors and just basically just hand them the trophy. Come take a picture with us. Come on, let's go. But that was kind of, I feel like, again, that's kind of Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And for us, I feel like just the fans and everyone give so much to us. We want to give it back. So even if it's these random people, you're supporting the Capitals, which means you're supporting us. Let's have a moment where you can, you know, for me, again, if I was in that position too, it'd be last a lifetime. Like, hey, I got to take a picture with the Stanley Cup, or I got this picture with the commissioner's trophy. But, you know, that's so bad. But like
when
I said,
when I was at Nats Park, by the way, this may be something you don't know, is that so I went upstairs outside the suite just to see, you know, they weren't letting media or anything back there. But like, I was just like, let's just go up there at the end of the game, see what happens. And Alex Ovechkin actually, you know, completely gone. And he walked over to the crowd. And, you know, like, there's a separation between athletes and fans, always. You know, sure. You know, there always has to be a little bit of a healthy separation because, you know. Mm-hmm. And Ovi just goes through the security and does a just big bear hug of, like, 40 fans. Like, he just does this to the whole fans. Yeah. And then I was just like, this is just such a special time. And I think that's what you're talking about, is this camaraderie, this celebration where it's just such a special moment. You want to share it with other people because they got you there too, you know?
I got that picture. Yeah. So it's nice. I had some time to go get it. Let me see here. So yeah, you can see.
Oh my God.
Like you said, everybody's kind of feeling good. But yeah, it was fun. But yeah, it's funny how I got back through that, but yeah, we went underneath and then we went down underneath and, you know, we did our after game, ritual with them. Ovechkin got involved, just pretty cool that, you know,
we didn't hear that.
Okay. Yeah. So we went underneath, after the game, they let us all in, you know, after media. They had no media in the room, no nothing. It was just us and the boys, which was awesome. Like I said, we did our ritual after the game. Ovechkin and some of the guys got involved, which was pretty cool. That's why I'll leave it at that. It was a lot of fun. And then they had the day off the next day. And, of course, we had nothing. So we, you know, had a couple of drinks. You know, me and Zim, I went back in the coach's room because, you know, I know the coaches fairly well. So I was like, you know, I'm going to back to the coach's room. That was probably after maybe an hour or so drinking with them, you know, talking with the guys. And so went there and kind of, you know, we're shooting the, you know what, Zim was in there, Davey was in there, and Rizzo, which is pretty cool. I'm definitely the fly on the wall for sure. You got, you know, cool, really awesome coaching staff for the Caps. And then you have Rizzo, the GM, Davey, the manager, and then the mayor of basically of, you know, DC and in there. And I was just, like I said, the guy that was, you know, the guy in the corner just being quiet. It was neat to be able to talk with those guys. A lot of great, you know, minds in the DC area and really just in sports, you know, in there, like I said, be able to, you know, listen in. And then all of a sudden we hear a knock on the door and Dozier is at the door and he says, hey, they're letting us out on the ice. Let's go on the ice. And we were like, what? And they're like, yeah, they're giving us all sticks. We're going on the ice. And I was like, well, heck yeah, I'm never going to say no to that. So I'm no exaggeration. I think it was one, two in the morning. We're out there stick handling with all the guys. You know,
Dozier was shirtless.
He always is. Yeah, we're out there, like I said, throwing pucks and shooting pucks. There's no, you know, nets or anything like that. And we have no skates, but we're sliding around out there on with skates and pucks and just having a good old time. And then I think, like I said, I think we left the arena, you know, I don't remember, but I bet you it was past two.
Oh, wow.
So like I said, just really cool to shut the place down with the guys, have a couple drinks. And then, you know, I got a ride home with Blaine, which, like I said, is a power play assistant coach,
that's awesome. Associate
coach. So, yeah, I got a ride home. He took me home. So,
can I ask you something about Blaine? Whenever they interview him or whenever he talks, he's always like this. The straight line emoji face. Does he have, in personal life, is he a little bit more animated? Or
he can get animated. Not really, though.
okay, so really. We're seeing the real Blaine.
Yeah, all right. It's real Blaine. I you know what's funny? So he got fired up. I think they had an overtime winner, maybe. I don't remember what it was, but I sent it to his wife. I said, look at this emotion. I've never seen this type of emotion. He clapped his hands and did like a little like fist pump and then it was back to normal. But, you know, he's a great guy. I got a few stories with him, but he's funny. You know, we'll go drinking or whatever. When he came to Detroit, he would come out to the house and stay with me. And, we'd get drinking and he's the same with no beers or 12 beers. Like he's the exact same guy, just nice, calm, cool, and collective. Like you said, kind of straight emoji, but really good person, down to earth, like, really enjoy hanging out with him. And like I said, we talk frequently, but like I said, it was cool to be able to go underneath and hang out with the guys. And that was kind of the cherry on top. That was, you know, we visited the president the next day. That was an experience, to say the least. It was an experience. But like I said, to be able to, you know, go to the Caps game, let loose with the guys, just with the guys. And then, like I said, go underneath, and basically both teams have a, you know, world championship in their sport, to enjoy one another is surreal.
Yeah, we saw, from the media perspective, we saw the conga line. We saw you guys randomly singing We Are Champions together. Yeah. And we saw Oshie doing his chug.
Yeah.
That's all we saw. Anything
that was,
else was...
That was, yeah. Yeah, there was more things involved. But it's like I said, it's all good fun. Like I said, they let media in after we did some of our stuff that we've done with them. And like I said... Jeez, like I said, I don't know if I've laughed so hard in my life. It was, like I said, just a good time, and be able to hang out with them, and you know, not that that was the end. There, you know, your careers are never, you know, where you can be like, hey, that's all, you know, I'm good to go type on any career. But it was kind of a closing of a chapter, I think, for everybody. That was neat. Absolutely. That they won one. We, you know, again, chased one and you know, succeeded as they did. And then that night was like, really cool that both of us can say that we've won one, and kind of like
you could say that it's now the district of champions, not the district of losers. You know what I mean?
So yeah, take it.
Awesome. Well, Adam, thank you so much for your time and telling your story from last year. Thank you for your support of our site, and thank you for loving hockey in general and racing too. And hopefully this will be the first of many times we hang out, and I hope you have a wonderful time with your family tonight and the national startup very, very soon again.
I hear you. Appreciate you guys having me on. Always enjoy our conversation, and stay safe, and I'll be in touch.
And we'll get you that iRacing set up. We'll figure it out. All right. All right. Thanks, man.
All right.
Have a good night. Right?
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now, it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.